Imagine you're running airport security, right?
Okay, yeah.
But instead of setting up checkpoints, you just open the front doors.
Oh, boy.
You let thousands of people flood directly onto the tarmac, and you figure, well, we'll just sort out who actually has a ticket right before they board the planes.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare.
It's total chaos.
Right.
But here's the crazy part. We're looking at a B2B landscape right now where this is exactly how companies run their marketing.
Yeah, they really do.
They just pull in everyone and everything, and catching everything is just a complete disaster.
It really is.
So today we're pulling from this remarkably sharp strategy guide. It's titled 12 B2B Lead Generation Strategies for Pipeline. It was written by Lauren Popek over at the Reach Marketing blog, dated May 12, 2026.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic resource because it actively dismantles what we call the volume trap.
Right.
Because, the default assumption in so many organizations is just that more contacts in the database mathematically guarantees more closed deals.
Okay, let's unpack this because the core argument here changes the entire foundation of how we acquire customers.
Absolutely.
Successful B2B lead generation isn't about raw contact volume. It's entirely about buyer fit, purchase intent, and sales readiness.
Yes.
It demands that companies stop treating every single form fill or every email reply or just, every random person who stumbles into a webinar as equally valuable.
What's fascinating here is how often lead generation programs fail simply because marketing is operating as like a contact delivery service.
Wow, yeah. Contact delivery service.
Exactly, just without any commercial context at all. They hit a lead volume metric, they pass a spreadsheet of names over to sales, and then
And then they celebrate.
right, they celebrate. But then the entire executive team wonders why the actual revenue pipeline is stagnant. My core belief has always been that data is completely useless unless it can be applied to solve a real problem. So our goal today is to give you a masterclass in the mechanics of separating casual passive interest from actual actionable commercial potential.
So before we even touch on how to attract people, I mean, we have to define what a good lead actually looks like in your specific system.
You have to.
You can't filter out the noise if you don't have a filter. It reminds me of setting up a really vague dating app bio,
Oh, that's a great analogy.
right? Like, if your target audience is described internally as, say, mid-market healthcare, that's the corporate equivalent of saying, I like food and having fun.
You're going to get a lot of matches, but.
You're going to get an overwhelming number of incredibly bad matches.
And those bad matches cost real money. I mean, healthcare or mid-market might describe a general total addressable market, sure, but they absolutely do not define sales quality.
Right.
The source provides this brilliant breakdown of the mechanics behind a strong ideal customer profile or ICP. A weak ICP just lists an industry. A strong definition one you can actually build a predictable pipeline on moves from the theoretical to the operational.
So it's not just healthcare.
No, it's not healthcare. It's multi-location healthcare operators with centralized procurement.
Right, because if they don't have centralized procurement, your specific software might take, what, 2 years to implement across 50 different clinics?
Exactly. It's a structural nightmare.
And the text goes further on company size, too. Instead of a vague term like mid-market, a strong ICP dictates 250 to 2,000 employees with regional expansion needs.
Yes, you're looking for an operational reality. Like, say, manual lead routing is causing delayed sales follow-up.
Not just a generic pain point like needs efficiency.
Precisely. But here's a complicating factor, and I think this is crucial. The text argues that a strong ICP isn't just about who you include, it's primarily about who you actively exclude.
The disqualifier.
Yes, the disqualifiers. This is where most companies completely lack discipline. Weak fit leads are dangerous.
Because they waste time.
They're not just neutral data points sitting in the CRM, yeah. They actively consume your sales team's limited hours. They distort your conversion reporting.
Right.
A company might look perfect on paper because they have, $1 billion in revenue. But you have to systematically disqualify them if they have notoriously long procurement barriers or low urgency.
Or maybe an IT infrastructure that just isn't compatible with your API.
Exactly. Disqualifiers are essentially the bouncers at the door of your pipeline.
Now, if you're listening to this and you're panicking
Yeah.
because your entire Q3 bonus is tied to raw lead volume, you're not alone.
Oh, definitely not.
This shift from volume to pipeline requires a massive cultural change because once you have this highly precise, restrictive ICP, you have to completely change your campaign strategy to match it. And this leads directly into account-based marketing, or ABM, But this guide emphasizes that ABM is not just, you know, sending a personalized email sequence with a first name merge tag.
Right. If we connect this to the bigger picture, ABM only works when sales and marketing pursue the exact same revenue targets.
It's a coordinated effort.
It is a coordinated revenue strategy. Marketing, sales, and customer success literally have to sit in a room, actively select priority accounts, and map the buying committee together.
And the text breaks this down into a tiered approach, which frankly makes the resource allocation realistic. You can't give the white glove treatment to 10,000 companies.
No, it's impossible.
Tier one is for your highly strategic enterprise accounts. This means deep, manual research, custom messaging tailored to their specific quarterly earnings reports, and like executive-to-executive outreach.
And then you scale it down logically from there. Tier two is for high-fit named accounts.
Okay.
So there you might use industry-specific content, say a case study specifically about multi-location healthcare and targeted sales sequences.
And tier three?
Tier three is for the broader qualified market. That's where you rely on scaled personalization and automated intent-based nurturing.
So for you listening right now, take a second and mentally audit your own organization or projects. Are you defining your target audience by broad, lazy categories or by actual operational pain points and buying triggers?
It's a tough question.
Because if it's the former, you don't really have a lead generation strategy. You just have an incredibly expensive database of strangers.
Yeah, and that brings up the operational reality of engagement. Once we have ruthlessly defined and filtered our target list, how do we actually get them to engage without alienating them?
Well, let me push back on that a bit, because I know exactly what a lot of sales directors would say here.
What's that?
They'd say, if we've done all this meticulous work to identify the absolute perfect fit, we know who they are. We know their operational bottlenecks. We know their tech stack. Why bother with content and nurturing at all? Why not just immediately drop an email asking them to book a 45-minute demo?
Right. The direct approach. Well, the answer is the friction principle.
The friction principle.
Yeah. Offering a 45-minute demo to someone who is just starting to research a problem is like a doctor prescribing surgery before they've even asked where it hurts.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's intense.
If you force every single website visitor toward a high commitment action like a demo, you will completely choke your pipeline. Mm. You have to match the conversion offer to the buyer's psychological stage of commitment.
Which means mapping the content directly to the friction. So a buyer who is just exploring a problem doesn't want to talk to a salesperson.
Not at all.
They want a diagnostic checklist, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a very low commitment offer.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've moved on to comparing different approaches, they need a vendor-agnostic buyer's guide.
Exactly.
If they're actively building a business case for their CFO, an ROI calculator is the perfect asset. Only when a buyer is actively evaluating vendors are they actually ready to accept that demo invite.
And the mechanical rule the source provides for this is vital, they say. Do not ask 12 questions before someone can download a basic checklist.
Right.
A low-commitment offer must require limited information.
Exactly. Just ask for an email and maybe a job title. Don't ask for their phone number, their company revenue, and their biggest fear in life just so they can read a PDF.
Yeah, it's too much friction.
But this idea of high intent content, it goes beyond just gated PDFs,
mm-hmm.
right? The text focuses heavily on assets like pricing explainers, direct competitor comparison pages, and deep use case documentation.
Yes, and these specific pages are incredibly powerful because they separate the serious evaluators from the casual browsers.
Okay.
Someone reading your blog post about top 10 healthcare trends might just be a student doing research.
Sure.
But someone spending 4 minutes on your pricing page and then navigating to your API documentation, that is revealing deep commercial context.
But B2B buying cycles are brutal. They can take 6, 9, 12 months sometimes.
Oh, easily.
A prospect might look at your pricing page in March and not be authorized to buy until November.
Right.
So relying entirely on them to just remember to come back to your site assumes they won't get distracted by a competitor.
Mm.
How do you skate in front of them without being incredibly annoying?
Retargeting. But the text adds a massive caveat to this. The goal of retargeting is progressive relevance, not constant exposure.
Progressive relevance.
Yes. Stalking someone across the internet with the exact same generic logo ad for 6 months is just a massive waste of budget.
This requires a bit of mechanical explanation, I think, because progressive relevance sounds a bit like a buzzword. How does a marketing team actually set that up between their CRM and their ad platforms?
It requires dynamic audience segmentation. Let's say a visitor reads a high-level introductory blog post. Your advertising pixel tracks that, and for the next week, your retargeting platform shows them ads for a diagnostic checklist.
Okay, makes sense.
Now, if they click that and download it, your CRM tags them as a known lead. The ad platform must immediately exclude them from that first campaign and move them into a new audience segment.
So now, instead of the checklist, they start seeing, what, case studies or ROI proof points?
Precisely. And if they finally visit the pricing page, the system automatically shifts them again, perhaps to an ad offering a direct consultation or a highly technical webinar. You rotate the messaging based on their behavioral footprint.
Speaking of webinars, this progressive relevance completely changes how we should be thinking about live events. I feel like so many companies throw a webinar together simply because marketing needs a campaign asset to justify their monthly budget.
Oh, happens all the time. And the guide is brutally clear that this is a mistake. To generate actual pipeline, a webinar must solve an active problem for the buying committee.
Right.
It needs to address a costly mistake buyers want to avoid, or provide a practical decision framework for, say, a new industry regulation.
And the actual value isn't even the live presentation itself, is it?
No, not really.
The true commercial value is entirely determined by the post-event follow-up. A generic automated email saying, "Thanks for attending, here is the recording," does absolutely nothing to advance deer. A strong follow-up requires a rep to look at the data, reference the attendee's specific role, or mention how they answered a specific poll during the session, and connect that directly to an operational issue.
Okay, so let's look at the operational reality of, say, a Tuesday morning for a sales development rep. The prospect has engaged with our perfectly friction-calibrated content. They attended the targeted webinar, they downloaded the ROI calculator. But you might have hundreds of these signals coming in every week. How do we prioritize who the sales team should actually call first?
Here's where it gets really interesting. The guide introduces the concept of separating fit from intent in lead scoring. Because most companies use a combined score, right?
Yeah, usually a single number.
They assign 10 points for opening an email, 20 points for visiting the website, 50 points for downloading a PDF. Yet all goes into one giant number.
And that combined system is just a recipe for disaster.
Why is that?
The text provides a perfect example to explain why. Imagine a university student who is researching a term paper on healthcare logistics.
Uh-huh.
They visit your site, they download 10 of your white papers, and they watch 3 webinars.
Well, their lead score is going to be like 500. It's going to be the highest score in the CRM.
Exactly. They have massive intent because they are consuming everything, but they have zero fit. They have absolutely no revenue potential. If you combine those scores, your CRM alerts your top sales rep to urgently call a college sophomore, while completely ignoring a VP of operations who only downloaded one pricing sheet but is a perfect structural fit.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
So the mechanics of the solution look more like a quadrant.
Yes, a matrix.
You score fit based on your ICP, revenue size, industry, technology stack,
right.
And then you score intent based on behavior.
Right.
So high fit below intent goes to marketing nurture, right? They look like a great customer, but they aren't shopping yet.
Exactly.
Low fit but high intent, like our student, gets automated qualification, but no immediate human sales attention.
But high fit and high intent, those go straight to sales for immediate outreach. And vitally, the text notes that these intent scores must decay over time.
Decay?
Yeah. Just because a VP was highly active on your site 6 months ago doesn't mean they should be prioritized today. The urgency has a shelf life.
That makes total sense. Now, how does external intent data factor into this? Because tracking what people do on our own website makes sense, but the source heavily emphasizes third-party intent data.
It does.
How do we know a target account is researching a solution if they haven't even visited our site yet?
This is where we get into the hidden data ecosystem of B2B buying. Third-party intent data relies on massive data co-ops. B2B publishers, research firms, and media sites pool their traffic data. They track content consumption at the IP address level.
Wait, so if 5 different people from a specific hospital network's IP address suddenly start reading articles about automated lead routing software across various tech blogs, the intent data provider flags that account as surging in interest for that category.
Yes, exactly. Strong intent programs look for those behavioral patterns, not just isolated actions.
Mm-hmm.
They look for sudden activity around a solution category immediately following a trigger, like that company receiving new funding or expanding into a new market.
And we can take this exact same logic of role and intent and apply it to paid social, specifically LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
The source points out that you cannot just target a company. You have to target by role.
Yeah.
Because even if an entire committee is evaluating the exact same software purchase, they are all looking through a completely different lens.
Oh, 100%. If you are selling a complex SaaS platform, the CFO only cares about cost reduction and time to value.
Right.
The IT director is deeply concerned about integration complexity, uptime, and security protocols. Revenue operations cares about funnel visibility and reporting features.
So if you serve them all the same generic product?
It resonates with no one. You must narrow the message around the buyer's operational reality.
Now, wait, relying entirely on these digital signals and inbound content assumes they know they have a problem. What if we need to actively interrupt someone?
Ah, outbound.
Yeah, how do these precise intent triggers change cold outreach? Because a lot of people claim outbound prospecting is just dead.
The guide argues outbound still works beautifully, but only if it is timely, specific, and relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Sending a generic list of product features to a purchased email list of 10,000 people, that is dead. Effective outbound has to be tied to a specific business trigger.
Finding those triggers is where the real work happens, I guess. You're looking at quarterly earnings calls, job postings, press releases.
Yes.
If a target account suddenly posts 5 job openings for regional compliance officers, that is a trigger.
Exactly. Or leadership changes at the target account. New regulatory pressure they're facing. Public growth initiatives they just announced.
Wow, so you use that as the hook.
The first cold message should not be a pitch. It should connect that specific trigger to a real commercial problem they need to solve right now. It's about context, not features.
Okay, so we have the perfect target. We have frictionless content mapped to the buyer's journey. And we have a rigorous two-dimensional scoring system.
Sounds perfect.
But none of this matters if the internal engine of the company is broken. Let's talk about sales and marketing alignment, because misalignment here is incredibly predictable.
Oh, it's a tale as old as time.
Marketing celebrates hitting their goal of 1,000 new leads. Sales complains that the quality is absolute garbage and ignores them, and the leads just sit untouched.
The root cause of that tension is almost always a disagreement on what a qualified lead actually is.
Yeah.
If marketing's bonus is tied to volume, they will lower the barrier to entry. If sales bonus is tied to closed won revenue, they will only want to talk to people who are already holding a credit card.
The solution the text offers is to completely change the metric. You have to measure marketing campaigns by their actual dollar contribution to the sales pipeline, not by raw volume.
Yes, pipeline contribution.
If a campaign generates 500 leads but $0 in pipeline, it's a failed campaign. Both teams have to agree on the fit, intent, and role requirements before a lead is ever passed over.
This internal alignment extends to how you handle partnerships and referrals as well. A warm introduction from a trusted partner is powerful because trust transfers before the first sales conversation even happens.
Right. Buyers rely on peers and consultants to reduce their perceived risk.
But the text explicitly warns that these referrals still need to be rigorously qualified.
They aren't a free pass.
No. A warm introduction from a partner isn't a magic wand that makes them a perfect fit. If they don't match your structural ICP, a referral will churn just as fast as a cold lead.
Which brings us to the ultimate magic wand people try to use.
I know exactly where you're going with this.
We have to talk about AI. Every executive board right now wants to know if AI is going to magically solve their lead generation pipeline.
This raises an important question. Can AI fix a fundamentally bad strategy? And the text is unequivocal about this. No.
No magic wand.
AI is fantastic for increasing speed and precision around logic that is already sound. It's incredibly powerful for identifying invisible patterns in your closed-won data or summarizing hours of a target company's earnings calls so a sales rep can personalize their outreach in 5 minutes instead of 2 hours.
But it creates massive risk if it's used for generic automation at scale.
Mm-hmm.
If you use AI to just blast thousands of low-effort emails that buyers can instantly recognize as machine-generated, you aren't doing lead gen.
No, you're not.
You are just accelerating the destruction of your brand's reputation.
Right.
You cannot automate a broken process.
AI should never replace human judgment in high-value accounts. You have to match your strategy to your reality. The guide includes a brilliant strategist selection matrix to anchor this.
Oh, right. The matrix.
It states that your tactics must match your business context. If you have a highly complex 6-figure deal value, you should be using account-based marketing and executive outreach.
Mm.
If you have a really complex buying committee, you need role-specific content and behavioral retargeting. There is no one-size-fits-all best tactic. The question isn't which tactic produces the most leads. The real question is, which tactic produces the most qualified pipeline at an acceptable cost?
So what does this all mean? If we synthesize everything we've talked about today, true B2B lead generation is an exercise in rigorous, almost uncomfortable qualification.
Very uncomfortable for some.
It's about actively removing friction for the people you desperately want to talk to and building massive walls to keep out the people you don't. It's about understanding the mechanics of intent data and treating buyers like human beings who have very specific operational bottlenecks. Lead volume is just a vanity metric. Qualified pipeline is reality.
And this is where you, listening to this right now, need to take a hard look at your own systems. I challenge you to review your lead generation funnels this week.
Seriously, do an audit.
Are you treating a white paper download the same as a pricing page visit? Are you letting weak fit, high revenue accounts clog up your sales team's calendar?
Are your simple, low commitment diagnostic tools hidden behind massive invasive forms? The honest answers to those questions will tell you exactly why your pipeline is or isn't growing.
It's a vital audit to do, especially as the technology shifts under our feet. But before we go, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder, building on what we just discussed about the mechanics of AI and intent data.
Okay, let's hear it.
Right now, AI is helping us analyze intent signals and personalize our human outreach. But if AI continues to improve at this exponential rate, achieving perfect precision at identifying operational pain points and budget cycles, will the future of B2B buying eventually bypass human marketing and sales entirely?
Wow.
10 years from now, will B2B lead generation just be your company's AI algorithm, quietly negotiating directly with a target company's procurement algorithm? No webinars, no PDFs, no sales calls, just machine-to-machine pipeline.
It's a fascinating and slightly terrifying possibility to consider as we build these automated systems.
Something to mull over while you're optimizing those lead decay scores. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the data, keep refining your mechanics, and remember, don't open the airport doors until you've set up the security checkpoints. We'll catch you next time.